Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Kate C. from Warminster.
All right, Kate.
Gotta check it. Hey, I'm Kate. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Kate.
Just need to like take a minute, take it in. Hey, I'm nervous. But it's totally not about me. I don't enjoy speaking. I used to love speaking. It was like the best thing that ever happened to me because I was obsessed with myself. I still am, but I used to love it, and now it makes me physically ill. I don't know why that is anymore, but like I have it. I've been given a gift, so I guess I gotta share it. Whatever, all that. Okay. So, Kate Alcohol, I just want to start by saying I'm so grateful. Like, I'm surrounded by women in this program. If you're not surrounded by women in this program, it's okay. But you just have to start reaching out, getting your hand up. Hopefully women will come to you. But I've been lucky enough where, like, I came in the rooms and, like, women just have been there ever since, and they kept showing up. And I kept doing work, and they kept showing up. And as I kept moving my feet, they just were there. And I'm moving in next week. Far away, it feels so far, to Georgia, and I'm just like, and I got sober here, and I'm so sad to leave, like, I just can't believe I'm gonna leave, and I'm like, I'm not gonna find anyone that's awesome anymore, and everyone's like, no, you will find women, there's gonna be women there, and the thing is, like, no one will be the same, but I will find new women, but I just want to get all the tears out now. I cry periodically throughout my talks, because I'm really crazy. I have extreme emotions. I'm emotionally, I'm emotionally, like, out of control still. So I just want to say that, like, Alcoholics Anonymous has revolutionized my life. And when I came in, I did not know I was an alcoholic. I truly, truly believed I was okay, and I just had a little bit of drama. Like, that's what I thought. And I'm convinced to the inner workings of my being today at 3.5 years sober, I am more alcoholic today than I've ever been. So, like, sober is scary for me. Like, I am more alcoholic every day. I just want to explain what it looks like when I wake up in the morning. Like, my eyes open and I'm like, immediate fear. So, like, and people think, like, oh, you're involved. Like, you have women everywhere. You're doing this. And, like, blah, blah, blah. You're always happy. And it's like, no, like, I'm in fear all the time. The only difference is today, like, I have all these tools. I have all these steps. I have all these people. I have AA. And I get right out of it, right? And I have this program. And I just do it on a rotation every single day. And that sounds really horrible. I guess maybe I'm not explaining it super fun. But it's like, it saves my life, because the way I used to live compared to the way I used to live, like, I'll do it every day. I'll do it in my sleep. I do not care. I would much rather. So I wake up like this. So today I woke up like that. And then the mistake I made was I looked at my cell phone. Danger zone. When you're an alcoholic of my variety, and then you don't go right to God or a higher power or into the steps, like, you look like this, and then you look at your phone, and then you might even start texting. Ooh, really bad. So we have to get disciplined, you know. And so, like, today I made that mistake, and then I started getting real crazy, and then lots of my girls have long novels for me about what's going to happen next week when I die. Like, that's what it looks like. But then, thank God, by the grace of God, I remember, like, wait a minute, there's something I'm supposed to do before I get up. I gotta go right to a higher power. But I just wanted to share that because I thought, like, I actually woke up looking like this thing. I thought it was funny. but I'm okay. I'm alive. So, and then it's very funny when bad weather happens, because everyone, like, I freak out. And then I'm confused, and then I'm like, do I go? Do I not? I don't know. Should I cancel? Is it going to be icy? I have a new car. Am I going to die? And like, and then I'm getting texts from everyone who was supposed to come, and they're like, do we go? I don't know. What should we do? Ask your sponsor. Like, pray to God. What does God want us to do? Like, joking about it. And it's a whole thing. And then I was like, and I've canceled a commitment before over weather. And this time I was like, no, I'm going. Like, it's insane. And I shouldn't have canceled that other one before. And I'm just really glad I'm here. So now that that's all, I feel better. Okay. So Kate Alcohol. My sober date is July 5th, 2014, so I have 3.5 years, and it's been the best 3.5 years of my life. Like, if you're miserable in here, I'm so sorry. Really, I'm sorry. Because, like, I love it. It doesn't mean I'm happy all the time. I have really dark days, and I cry a lot, but I've never felt freer in my life. And if you're new and you don't know what that feels like, that's okay, too, because I lose it a lot. Just get with one of us. Like, we'll show you what that looks like. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous. My entire family is in Alcoholics Anonymous. Grandparents, parents, brothers, now sister, like, everybody's in. We're all in the club. And So I grew up around it. Christmas Eves, we're going to meetings, like little coins in our coin drawer, in the junk drawer. Like, that's what I saw. I had no clue what you guys were doing here. It was meetings. I just had no idea. And just because I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous does not mean my parents were well. There was a ton of chaos all the time. And I just recently explained what I remember seeing as a kid. Like, it was just like, like, all the time. Just craziness all the time. Animals loose. Like, things are happening. There's dog poop everywhere. The cops are calling us because our animals were always loose. It was very weird. And then my, they were always running the neighborhood. And, like, they would bring them back to our house, and the police would knock on the door and be like, is this your dog? And then to get your dog out of police custody, this is crazy, you have to call your dog. And if they don't come to you, you can't have your dog. And our dogs were never trained. So they would never come. And we'd be like, we swear it's our dog. And, like, they wouldn't even come. And we would call them, like, the opposite name of their name, and they would come. It's crazy. So that's, like, what my life was like. It's just chaos. My parents split up when I was, I think, like, maybe 3 months old or something. So I was a mistake in my eyes. And I swear, I say this funny today, but I believed it. Like, deep in my heart, I believed, like, they got pregnant with me and they broke up right away and I must not have been planned and blah, 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 blah. And I'm a planner now because, like, I must plan everything. And I really believed, like, I wasn't supposed to be here. I'm much younger than my siblings. And then my dad and my mom hate each other. So I'm like, wow. And that's what, like, that's not because of anything they said to me or did to me. I believe I was alcoholic in my thinking from, like, such a young age. Like, I didn't feel a part of ever. And I just used all these little things I would hear to solidify that. Like, my brother used to tell me I was adopted. Oh, so I'm like, oh my God, I totally don't fit in. This is why I don't fit in. And it wasn't that, like, it sounds really weird to explain it to a non-alcoholic. But I do believe that I was alcoholic before I ever picked up a drink. I had this just innate feeling of emptiness. That's, like, really sad. When you're 6, you shouldn't be scared of the world. Like, you should be free and happy. And, like, today, the feelings I have because of the 12 steps, I feel like a 6-year-old who's free. I'm, like, free. I'm, like, a kid again. Like, I can breathe. I can, like, after I wake up like this, I can breathe and get to God and get with some women who remind me, like, I'm not going to die. The world's not burning around me. Like, sometimes I actually think the world is burning around me and I'm going to get caught in it. When nothing usually is different, it's just all in here. And at 6 years old, I had those thoughts. That's crazy. I was just explaining to my normal friends, they were asking about AA, and I might have taken it too far because I said, yeah, sometimes I used to think if I saw a big bus coming, what would happen if I ran in front of it? I swear. And they were like, and, like, I took it too far because we were talking just about AA, and, like, I don't know, I thought maybe I could go there. And they just got really weirded out, but that's just what I think. Like, that's not normal. So if you have weird thoughts like that, it's okay. You're in the right place. I feel like I'm just, like, not making sense. I hope I am. So, okay. So grew up in chaos. I like to share, like, I had this really long hair and it would get really knotted up. It was down past my butt, and my mom would, like, love this hair, and it was unnecessary, and it's, like, it just reminds me of all the extra stuff I try and put on me to make things look really good when it just, inside, it's all knotted up, and it would be a rat's nest, and I would scream and cry because no one was allowed to touch it because it would hurt so bad, and it would, like, fall in the toilet when I would go to the bathroom, and it was just disgusting, and she would never want to cut it, and it's just, like, a metaphor for, like, the nastiness I lived with for so long, like, the knots, and it's, like, it's so easy, just cut it off, just drop it, like, get over it, you know, and I would walk around with this hair, and finally, we cut it off, and I don't know why I'm telling the story, but it feels like it just reminds, whenever I think of how free I got in Alcoholics Anonymous, I think back to, like, cutting that hair off when I was little, and it was, like, it was so simple, but we have to hold on to that, like, I'll hold on to those rat's nests in my hair forever until I'm ready, and so what happened? So I screamed and cried to get attention at all times. I work with women who, like, I meet so many different women. Some are just really quiet and reserved and blocked off, and they don't want to share anything. I'm the opposite of that. I will share it all. I'll bare my soul. I'll tell you the details that are just not supposed to be shared. I have no humility. I have no clue what boundaries are. I just tell you everything. I'm always screaming in your face. And that's how I got attention when I was little, and it worked. So, like, that's what I took into my life. So in high school, in college, like, if I needed you to listen to me, like, I got loud, or I talked over you, or I screamed, or I got, like, hysterical. And I used to think I was really in touch with my emotions because, look, I'm crying. Like, look, can't you see how much I'm feeling? But it was hysterics. It was insanity. It was alcoholism. And I had no idea. And I tell, like,
we talk about this all the time. Like, my mom used to think I had personality disorder. And personality disorders, like, legit, like, that's really serious. Like, it's bad. No, if anyone has it, like, you can work through the 12 steps and it does calm down. But, like, I didn't have personality disorder. I had alcoholism and it presented, like, narcissism, like, personality disorder, like, bipolar. Like, that's what it looks like. It's so intense for me anyway. And so I remember she had this book and it was like how to deal with a child with personality disorder. And I'm like I'm a crazy person. I was in therapy at a young age. And I grew up with these parents who were into all that too. Like my mom was in AA. My dad was in AA. I don't know that they worked the 12 steps. It's really not my business. But they didn't. But it's like really my business. No. But they didn't. So, but it doesn't matter. They came. But they were striving, they were seeking, they were wanting different, right? So I'm surrounded by this, I go to high school and I start drinking. I'll just talk about my first drink because I remember it. It was a beer bong, right down. Why would you sip a beer? It's weird to me. Just drink it fast, get it down, get it over with. So that's what I did, and I immediately loved it. Like, I don't remember arriving because I was always arrived. Like, in my head, I was the everything to everybody. Like, that was it. So to drink was nothing, but I did feel more comfortable. And I recently remembered an experience before I started drinking because I forgot to share, like, people was my first real drug of choice. Like, I needed people. I needed you to make me feel better. I always had a best friend. I cling to you like death. I hold you hostage. I keep you in my bubble until you run. Like, you have to escape from me. I did that, like, really young. I had always had a best friend, and I always had a boyfriend, and people were my real filler until I had that beer bomb. And at this party one time, before alcohol was ever involved, we had a soda chugging contest, and I beat everybody, and I chugged all the soda faster than everybody, and everyone was like, I just picture it. This wasn't probably how it was, but I was, like, raised up, and people were holding me around the party, and everyone loved me, and I chugged the soda fastest, and I'm cool. And, like, that was my first experience with, like, feeling filled up by, like validation. And that's all. I strived for that forever. And then I found alcohol, and I felt a little more peaceful, but my outside got a little more intense. So I felt good in here, but the outside was like, yes, alcohol is a depressant. So you're supposed to, like, chill out, get tired, maybe a little flush. Let's go to bed after I have a glass of wine. I would have a glass of wine and it would be like I did a line of cocaine. Like, I would be like, whoa, like, ready to party. And in my eyes, it was party. It wasn't like drink. Like, I didn't know there was an allergy happening. I didn't know that my mind was telling me, like, you need more of this. I had no idea. I truly believed I just wanted to party. Like, and party meant be around people. I needed to be surrounded by people. I needed just to be in, you know? And so after the soda chugging contest, I ended up chugging beer bongs. And it was the best thing ever. So I just thought, I didn't have that immediate blackout story. I didn't have that immediate go to jail and everything's downhill after the first drink thing at 20, 19, whatever. Like, I drank really successfully for a lot of years. It took me, I came in pretty early, 27, but it took me down. Like, I feel like it was, like, kind of drawn out. People come in so young nowadays, but probably because of harder things. But anyway, so I drank pretty normally. Like, I drank like everybody else. Little did I know they weren't thinking about alcohol the way I was thinking about alcohol, like, during the weekday when, like, they were all doing stuff, activities, and I was just, like, the misunderstood artist. Like, that's, like, my MO. I had different hair colors, different styles. Every other, like, year I had to reinvent myself, like, you know, piercings, dyed hair. It was, like, a whole thing. And it was all the time because I just had no clue who I was. Like, I was a walking shell. And I had these friends who, like, were so deep in themselves. Like, they knew who they were. They knew what they were going to college for in ninth grade. Like, who even knows? I don't even know what I'm going to eat tomorrow. Like, I'm so scared. I don't know anything. Like, how do you know that? You know, and I had to make up stuff. I had to figure it out as I went. And it was really tiring. So I go to college because that's what everyone's doing. I don't know. And I just drink my way through college and boyfriend my way through college. That's just what it was. I just had a ton of boyfriends, and they all were, like, the one. Everyone's very serious. Like, it's very serious. And I used to feel so intensely. Like, I don't know if anyone can relate to this. Maybe you can. My feelings feel so intense that I used to research that because I thought I knew something wasn't right. Like, I was so hypersensitive. That's actually a thing. So I would look it up. And it was like, it explained the scientific thing that we have more, hypersensitivity is a condition. Those people have more nerve endings in their body, therefore they feel emotions more intensely. And I like held on to that. I was like, yes. And every time I would meet a new boyfriend, a new friend, I'd be like, listen, I'm really hypersensitive, so watch out. You know, and it's like not normal to have to explain yourself before you're even crazy to people. And they'd be like, okay, like no one got it. So whatever. And I don't know. So I have a lot of good friends who stuck by me for a long time, which is very hilarious. And we talk about today, like what I was like. So anyway, I'm just building the story of like how really emotionally unavailable I am in general to anybody. So I go to college, I have tons of boyfriends, and then I get introduced to Al-Anon. And my mom's like, you have a love addiction. Like, she's diagnosing me all the time with stuff. She's giving me books, like the whole shebang. So I'm like, I do. So I start going to Al-Anon when I'm in college and I'm visiting her. I'm going to Al-Anon. I like to share about that because that's really where I heard of, like, the 12 steps. I didn't know what it meant. I had no clue what was going on. I just thought because everyone in my family's alcoholic, I need to go to Al-Anon. So I go to Al-Anon, and I definitely love spilling my guts there. And I have this boyfriend at the time, and he's a coke dealer, and I just think that's awesome, and I'm drinking, and then I show up at Al-Anon on Sunday mornings, and I reek, and blah, 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 blah. So this is my introduction to the 12 steps. I leave college, and I get a job. I graduate. It's, like, insane. I don't know how that happened. Grace of God. And I start working in an office, and I want to die. Like, I'm not an office person, but apparently I want to be one now today. I want to change jobs because I'm always changing everything. So I'm in an office. I want to die. I'm killing myself. I'm like, this is the worst. I have no substance in my life. My life is like the bar Wednesday through Sunday. I clean it up. I go to work. I'm a functioning part of society to an extent, but I live in my mom's basement, and I pretty much feed off of her any chance I can get. And that's what it looks like. It's not that bad, right? Seems good to me. I'll take it. And so I get an opportunity to live in Mexico. And I do that. Well, I live down the shore, and I work like 3 days a week, and then I spend 4 days down the shore. Like, I'm managing and controlling any possible way I can to be able to be in the center of any party at all times. And as you know, I'm getting older. I'm getting into like my like early 20s, right? Things are starting to change. Friends are starting to get engaged and married, or maybe even have babies. And I mean, that's like foreign to me. So I'm like, very weird. So I go to Cancun because that's the answer. And at this point, I just want to share, like, I have no clue that any of this is weird. I have no clue that it's weird that I have a boyfriend every year and then they run or I leave them because I'm like, oh, I can't with you. And I find any reason to be out, like, oh, you said that to me? Yeah, see ya. You know, I have no clue that I'm in the not normal zone. My reality is totally skewed and this is really normal. Nothing bad's happened to me. I'm perfectly fine. Like, I have a job. I make money. I go to Cancun and I live there. So that's what I do. It was fun. It was crazy. But it got really dark, and I share that just because that's when I remember things started to change, and like you kind of begin to get to that line. And they talk about this line in the book where we cross this line and we can't come back. It's not fun anymore, you know. And like I crossed that line, I believe, in Cancun, and now that I'm clear enough, I can look back and I really remember that line. It was like nothing was gonna stop crossing the line, obviously. But I just remember like the darkness, like the drinking and the partying and the being around enough people and having enough boyfriends. It wasn't fixing like this empty hole I talked about that I had at 6 years old, this empty pain. At 6 years old to have that, and then it reemerges after like alcohol stops working. And so I'm really grateful to alcohol because it was my solution. Like, I would have cut my wrists long before I could have ever made it to Cancun if I didn't have alcohol. Like, I wouldn't have made it. My head was so loud. I couldn't stand myself. I wanted to die if I was sober. I didn't know that at the time. I thought I learned to live in that. Like, it was just normal to me. So when I started to feel that pain, it was really scary. So one day I got drunk. I had this boyfriend, Avi, who I lived with, and I just left. I was like, I'm out. I was like, Mom, book me a ticket. And she was like, yeah, because I'm in Cancun. I barely have minutes on my phone. You had to have minutes there. And I fly home. And I come home, and I need a smooth transition, so I start waitressing, even though I have a bachelor's degree, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's like I could never just, like, launch. Like, I just was always just, like, crawling by, you know? And then I get this job. And I swear God has been, like, looking out for me this whole time. I just can't see a higher power. I can't see there's something else there. I'm just running in my little chaos bubble, I like to call it. Like, it's a bubble, and it just whirls me around everywhere I could go. So I get this job, and I start working, and I start really managing and controlling. Like, I look good. Like, I'm making money. I get an apartment in the city. I'm going to Al-Anon. I'm cleaning up my life. I'm posting spiritual quotes, and I'm feeling good, and I'm in, and I know what you guys are talking about because I have a sponsor in Al-Anon. And mind you, like, my family's in AA, so I'm seeing a lot of recovery. My brother's actively in, like, a sober house, and there's all these guys that are doing really fun stuff, and I'm like, huh. And I'm always feeling like something's missing. Like, I'm always looking for the next thing that's going to make me feel better. I just can't find it. Like, what is it? I don't know where to find it. And so I am doing all this, and I get a vacation, and I go back to Cancun. And this is like a year or so that I'm like managing and controlling. I'm drinking one weekend with one group of friends. I work in threes. So I have three weekend stretches. So my first weekend, pretty manageable, pretty good. I don't wake up with a rando anywhere that I don't know. First weekend's great. I wake up with a slight hangover, maybe a little vomit. Second weekend, I'm like, last weekend was really manageable. Oh, I'm working all week, so I'm really holding it together. And then I'm going out the next weekend, but with a different group of friends, just in case. And I let it a little looser, right? And I get a little crazier. I definitely wake up somewhere random, but it's like not a big deal. It's fine. And then I don't hate myself. And then the third weekend, I'm usually like bruised, vomiting, sick. I have no clue where I am. I've lost my phone. I've lost my wallet. Like, that's what it looks like. And at this point, my drinking, there was no cutoff level. Like, I had a blackout every time. And that's how I know I crossed the line. I didn't have that immediately. It took a long time for me to progress to that type of, like, drinking. But I knew, like, if I went out, I would bring $20 because I knew I could spend that $20. Maybe a guy would buy me a drink or two. And I'd be good. And I would always find myself scamming for money, running home to get my debit card. Like, my friends would be like, no, like, we have to lock up your money. Like, I was I wasn't messy when I would get drunk. Some people wouldn't even know I was blacked out, but I'm having full conversations. Like, it's insane. But I would black out and I would not remember anything. And that's really scary as a woman, like, waking up truly not knowing who's next to you and not having any clue where you are, how you got there, like, what? Like, that's frightening. I think of my future children, like, ever having to do that, and it frightens me. But at the time, like, I knew I was ashamed of it, but I didn't know it was, like, a problem. I thought, like, lots of people did this. I don't know. So I get this vacation, and I always share this because this is when I really woke up. And at this point, I know what my life looks like is not normal. I have chaos everywhere. Friends are always leaving me. I have probably, like, a spreadsheet of, like, 1,000 best friends that are no longer my best friend, right? It's like, that was the one. And then the boyfriend spreadsheet too. Like, there's so many. And it's just always like a clinging thing. So I'm managing and controlling really well. Like, I have my 3-weekend stretch. It's not that bad. I'm working, and I'm working in this addiction treatment field. And I get this job, and I'm not like in treatment or anything. I just sell a service to like centers, and I go to these conferences, and everyone's in these open AA 12-step meetings, and I'm going to these meetings. And I'm getting drunk at the airport before I go to these conferences. And then I'm going to these meetings at 7 a.m. Like, I got up at 7 a.m. And I'd be like, hi, I'm a friend of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was dead serious. Like, I really believed that I was catching on to what you guys were doing. And a lot of these people at these conferences were in recovery in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they were living it. And I was seeing it. And I was like, this is crazy. But I didn't really even know I thought I was managing and controlling. Life was all right. Until I got vacation from this job. And I go to Cancun. And it's almost like I was like waiting to just like... Like, I was dying inside, trying, like, managing and controlling and molding what my life looked like and hiding. And my mom's over here, just this sweet little angel of this little spiritual yoga woman. And I destroy her. Like, anytime she opens her mouth, I'm like, shut it up. Mm-mm. Like, do not talk to me. Because I can't even listen to her because she's so mind-numbingly annoying. Like, does anyone relate to that? I feel like you guys are looking at me like, you're mean. No, like, mind-numbing. You know, this woman who just wants me to be happy, just loves me, always there. What do you need? Are you okay? And I just shut up. You know, I can't even stand to be around her. And she's over here, you know, whatever her helping others looks like, it's not my business. But it's like what she does. And she's happy, though. Like, she's sober and happy. And I didn't understand that. I didn't think that was actually a thing. So I go to Cancun. I get really messed up. 6 days. Don't remember anything. There's no medium anymore. I'm just blackout all the time. And on the flight home, I need Xanax because I can't even calm down. I know how bad I was. Like, I know what I did. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, like, use your imagination. I was just, like, a big, nasty person. So, like, it was horrible. So I come home, and I'm like, this is it. I'm going to change my life. And that was, like, a theme. And actually, I just recently went on a little trip with my best friend, who is a normal person, non-alcoholic. And we went to visit our old college, and we went through my old Facebook, and we looked at all my old posts. And let me just say, first of all, it was embarrassing. Second of all, it's like, love of my life, like, and it would tag like a guy, and then it would be like, life's so great, I'm so grateful. And then it would be like, life's really hard. And then it would be like, heartbroken, period. I wrote heartbroken on a status for like 7 years in a row. And after the heartbroken, it was always, life's really hard. How, when's life change? Like, and I, it's like, for years I was searching, and I didn't even know I was searching for like this solution of what, because I don't even know that I'm so fucking crazy. It's crazy. And it was so funny, and we were laughing, and my best friend doesn't get like how deeply meaningful looking at that was actually was, because it was apparent, like, I am a different person. So I go there, I come back, I hate myself, I'm like, I'm gonna change, I'm pulling it together, and a month later I'm pregnant and I wanna kill myself. And 2 days before I found out, I thought to myself, how does one not drink? Like, that's not a normal thought. If you guys have had that thought, you might be in the right place. It's not normal. Like, normal people can just not drink. They're okay with it. I really had to think hard. I was like, how does one, like, not go to the bar? And the reason that thought had been sparked was because there was this girl who I lived in Cancun with, I went to college with. She kind of showed me everything about powdered substances and also drinking, and she taught me everything I knew, and she got sober, and she had been sober about a year at this point. And she posted this blog about her first year without alcohol, and I read it, and I was like, what, one whole year? Oh my god, I'd be so skinny, you know, like all these things. That's what I'm thinking. And then I'm really like, she got me thinking, and I was like, how do you not drink? Like, And I knew that scared me to have that thought. Like, that's crazy that I think I don't know how to not drink. And it was clear. I didn't realize what it meant, but it was clear that I wasn't normal, per se. And then 2 days later, I was pregnant, and there it was. I had to stop drinking. And some people don't, whatever. I was like, I thought this was the answer. I was like, this is it. Oh, my God, this is it. I'm going to change. I have to change. I don't have a choice now, right? I have to change. I have to have a baby, and I have to raise it, and it's going to change my life, right? And it's, like, the next thing. Like, talk about selfish and self-centered. Like, talk about thinking that a little human is going to make my life better, relying on some, like, that's insanity to me. It's scary how, like, I couldn't even see that. So I call my mom, I find out, like, and 6 seconds later, I'm like, Mom, we're having a baby. And this poor woman's like, okay, you know, like, all right. And I leave my apartment, I move in with her, we're doing this, I'm pregnant, I'm sober, and I'm 3 months sober, and I have an appointment. And I share this in depth because this is it, like, this is the moment. If this did not happen to me, I don't know that I would be here. I truly do not. Maybe some other way I would have found my way in here, but this is it. Like, I got real lucky because my life looked really good on the outside. Like, nothing was wrong. I don't get in trouble legally. I'm not one of you because I don't have a DUI. I don't live in a sober house, and I've never been to rehab. It's hard to qualify. Like, I just was better than everybody in my head. I didn't want to believe that I had an allergy. And, like, the longer time I get sober and the more I hear my thoughts, I am, like, more alcoholic than it's, like, actually very frightening in there. So we're having a baby, blah, 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 3 months in, and I go to the doctor, and the baby has a severe birth defect, and once again, I want to kill myself. And, you know, I have moral and philosophical convictions galore. I know I'm doing the right, I made the right decision, I'm doing the right thing, I'm not going and doing the immortal, sinful thing, right, because I don't even know what church is, but I think I know, I have all these ideas about what the world looks like, and I'm doing it. So how could this happen, right? And the doctor's like, and my mom came and met me, and she's like, what would you do? And the doctor said, if it was my daughter, and she was like, I don't know who the dad is, I'll just put that out there. I don't know what I did in Mexico. I don't even know where country he could be from. Like, that was a full-on 5-day blackout, and I now am in this situation. This doesn't happen to normal people who drink normally. And I was thinking, like, that girl is getting married, and that girl has a baby with her husband, and I'm not saying that's the norm and it has to look like that, but what I'm saying is it made me question, like, how does this happen to me? And I used to watch Jerry Springer. I always share that. I'm dead serious when I say that. I used to watch Jerry Springer and wonder, how do you not know who that is? Like, how does that happen? This is how it happens. Like, this alcoholism for me, like, it happened to me. And I came from a good home with parents who really loved me, even though I thought, like, they hated me and I was the enemy. And And so anyway, I'm there, and I have to make a horrible decision again. And I'm faced with, like, another pain wall. Because I thought that first pain wall was it. Like, I was all alone. I didn't have AA. I didn't have AA to run to when I got pregnant and wanted to kill myself. I wasn't in here yet, you know. I had nothing. I was completely alone, and I couldn't talk to anybody about it because they would think I'm a big, horrible whore, you know, and that's it. And so this happens, and I'm faced with another wall of pain, and I remember sitting on this couch. It's yellow, my mom has it, and I was sitting there, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And my mom looked right at me, and she said, the answer's in there. The answer's been in your heart this whole time. It's been in there forever. You just can never listen. You're so fucking loud all the time. You don't listen. You're just always screaming. And she's right. And so I got quiet, and I settled down a little bit, and I listened. And for me, I had to make a decision, and I made it. I had to not go through with the pregnancy because I just wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready to bring in a life that was going to be disabled or whatever. It was just the decision I made, and I've been forever grateful for that decision ever since. But it thrust me through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, like, so fast, it's not even funny. The pain I felt was so, like, it brings me to tears every time I talk about it. Not because I'm so sad, because it's, like, the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, the only thing that's going to get you to do the shit I've done in AA is pain, period. It's it. Like, it's pain. And if you haven't had enough, you might need some more. I don't know, you know? But I got thrown through the doors. Like, I came in here, like, hands, like, gloves off, like, please, somebody, you know? And they did. They were there. And I remember I had to go through that experience, and I was all alone, and it was traumatic, and blah, 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 and all the details. Like, we're so into details. And I remember, like, a week later, my brother was sober at the time, and he's not sober often, so this was, like, a miracle. And he looked at me, and he said, want to go to an AA meeting? And I said, yeah. Like, I don't go to AA. The last time someone in Al-Anon said, have you ever tried Alcoholics Anonymous? I was like, how dare you assume that I'm, like, should be there. Like, no, I know what that place is for. That place is for not me, you know? And so he looked at me, and I was like, yes. And he was like, okay. So we went to a meeting in Doylestown. I'll never forget. It was a Thursday night, 12 and 12 step whatever meeting. I don't even know. And it was all men. There was, like, no women, maybe one or two. I don't remember. And I just sat in the corner, and I've been crying, like, excessively for days. And anyone who met me when I first came in will remember, like, all I did was cry. I didn't talk real words. I just cried for several months. And thank God, like, I had a lot in here that needed to come out. And I love when, like, I have this one woman who calls me all the time. She's like, I'm on the verge of tears. I'm like, let them out. And she's like, what do you mean? I can't. My makeup's going to run, and everyone's going to see, and I'm in a meeting. And I was like, that's the perfect place to cry. Like, what are you talking about? That's the place where, like, this is the safest place. I feel immediately at home when I walk in these rooms. And I remember I went to that meeting, and I'd been to Al-Anon a ton, and I tried to build a fellowship or whatever I was doing in there. And this was home. Like, I knew it, man. There wasn't even any women there, and I knew it. I just felt right. I don't know why. I just was ready, I guess. And so then they gave me what the best thing they did for me, which I used to knock, like, every meeting. I used to knock everything that everyone did in Alcoholics Anonymous when I got into the big book, right? I used to knock it. Because I couldn't see past my own friggin' big head. But at the time, they gave me this meeting list and a phone list. And I used to be like, phone list, who's going to call that? I used the phone list because I was so willing. I was so scared. I was so alone. I couldn't call anyone else I knew outside of alcohol, like anyone, normal friends. Like, I was just so alone. And so they gave me a phone list of a few women, because there wasn't a ton of women there. And they told me what meeting was next. And I remember I wrote it down. And so what I did was I just kept going to meetings. Like, the next day it was Thursday, I went to a Friday meeting. And then it was the beginner's meeting. And that was traumatic. I had to put my name on some list. And I was like, and all it was like, I can't do it, I'm good. So I was introducing myself. I'm Kate, I'm an alcoholic. I have no clue what that means, but that's what you're supposed to do, right? We're just coming in, we're saying it, I don't know. And I don't know. So I'm just crying and talking, and women started really coming. And I don't care what anyone thinks about any meetings. Like, those women came, whether they were armed with the facts about alcoholism or not, it doesn't matter. They showed up. They started calling me. They would text me. They would ask me how I was. They would listen to this. I'm on repeat. You want to listen? Okay. And I will talk to you for hours. I've been blessed with sponsees that do the same to me. And I'm like, you know, it's great. So they would call, and so I started going through the steps with some chick, because they were like, get a sponsor, right? I don't know, what does everyone say? Get a sponsor, get a home group, blah, blah, blah. So I don't think I got a home group. I don't know what I was doing. I was really confused and delirious from crying. I didn't wear makeup for like 6 months. So, oh, and men were off limits. I was so afraid of men. I was so tired. I was so done. I wanted, and I mean, that's like a spiritual awakening in itself for me to like not want to be near a man. There's lots of men in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they, a lot of them sound really good. So I'm like, you know, the fact that I didn't try and manipulate some guys into like loving me in the beginning of sobriety is a gift from God. That's all I have to say. Cause I just was like so sick and crying and no makeup and I hated myself. So, this woman had beautiful red hair. And that's how I choose people to be in my life. Like how pretty you are. It's sick. I'm like, so, you know, so I was like, hey, could you be my sponsor? And she was like, sure. And so we started going through the work. And because I was in Al-Anon, she was like, oh, well, you already did the first few steps. Like, we just, like, skipped a bunch of stuff. I was super confused. I might have this whole experience wrong in my head. But I just didn't learn about what it meant to be an alcoholic is what I'm getting at. We started writing a four-step. And what was happening to me was I was so willing and excited. And I was hearing a lot of things in AA that were really exciting. And I was like, I found out, like, my uncle was in the 50s in AA, and he used to carry around this blue book, and I used to think it was a Bible, but I found out later, like, when I came in the rooms, that I found out that was a big book, and, like, I just started to get real hype on the history of AA, and I started to sound like, I started to get lit up. I was on the pink cloud. I was like, yes, what is this place? Ah! Like, I felt relief here, and I didn't even do anything yet except show up. It was, like, the best, and everyone's like, you need to chill out. Like, calm down. Like, why are you so loud? Like, you're really excited. And, like, I'm sorry. I wanted to blow my brains out a few months ago. Like, what's the big deal if I'm a little hyped? Like, this is really exciting in here. Am I right? I don't know. So I was really excited, and a lot of people just maybe weren't experiencing excitement in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. It's, like, not my problem. It just isn't. I mean, I'm not judging them. I'm just saying this is what was happening. I was, like, they were scaring me. They were saying a lot of stuff about the pink cloud and, like, be careful, you might fall off that. And I was like, well, what am I not, what does that mean? So to me, an alcoholic who has doom on her mind, that means that this isn't real and I'm going to die. And I didn't find a solution because you guys were saying there was a solution here, but I didn't know what it was, which is fine. I wasn't there yet. But then I was hearing a lot of calm downs and be quiet and you're on the pink clouds and this and that. And I was just like, oh my God. So I just don't talk about that with people anymore. Like I just don't say you're on a pink cloud. It just didn't benefit me. I get what they were saying now. They were saying life's going to hit and you're going to have some deep, dark times in sobriety. And they're right. But, you know, at the time, I was really excited about this thing and I just felt like my bubble got really popped. But anyway, poor me. So it didn't matter because God showed up and I went to this meeting and I was crying, but not for the reasons I was crying in the beginning from relief. I was crying because I was so afraid I was going to die. I was so afraid I was going to die and that I didn't find the solution. And I went to this speaker meeting and this guy was talking about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And like the steps I was doing with this woman, there wasn't really a big book involved. She was definitely reading from it, but I didn't have one and I just didn't know what was going on. And then this guy was talking about this experience he had with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I am the type that needs the glitteriest, shiniest thing. Like, if you have the best thing in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to have it. I'm going to have what you have. Like, I need that. And this guy was, like, really happy but, like, calm, and I need that. And, like, he was excited, and I was like, I'm excited, but, like, I feel like no one around. I need to get excited. Like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I went through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I heard this other woman spouting off in the corner about, you know, she was just living life, and she was excited. And I was like, oh, she's really exciting. And so I was just taking it all in, right? And then another day I went to a morning big book study because I went in and I found like big book. And this woman was at that meeting, that woman who was like freaking out. And I was like, she's like my kind of lady. So I'm crying immediately. The minute I would hit the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would cry. It's a phenomenon I'll never understand. Like I hit the podium and I'm like, so she's there and I'm crying. It's the beginning of the meeting. It's like 11 a.m. on a Saturday. It's a big book study in Doylestown. And she's like, honey, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I'm so scared and I'm going to fall off the pink cloud and I might die. And I thought there was a solution here. And I'm like, da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, you need to breathe. And I was like, I can't because I don't know what this is. I'm afraid. And she's like, okay, well, do you know why you're an alcoholic? And I was like, yeah, because I'm crazy. And she was like, no, like, why do you qualify as an alcoholic? And I was like, I have no clue. And she's like, let me open to page 44. And she showed me two questions. And she read those questions to me. She said, if when you start, can you stop? And I was like, well, yeah, I had that martini that one time. Check. And then she said, or if when you really want to quit, you can't stop altogether or whatever. I don't know what the words are. But and that meant like if when I try to quit, I can't stay stopped. And I was like, well, this is my first time in AA. So yeah, I'm not an alcoholic. I could not qualify. I couldn't qualify, and I hadn't begun because I was in the whirlwind of just something else. And so she was like, all right, well, why don't we meet on Tuesday at 7 o'clock at my house? And I was like, oh no, I can't. She was like, what? And I was like, well, I have my home group that night. Oh, I did get a home group. That's right. It was a women's meet. I was like, I have my home group that night and I have a sponsor. She's like, okay. She's like, well, I don't really care to sponsor you. I just want to give you an experience with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. This is just what happened to me. And I was like, oh, well, I can't. And like 6 minutes ago, I was crying that I was going to die. And now this woman's offering me a solution of the 12 steps at her house at 7 o'clock on Saturday and Tuesday. And I'm saying no. Because I just that quick, I forget that I was just about to die. It's like insanity. And she looks at me and she goes, okay, well, do you want to live or do you want to die? And I was like, what is she talking? Like, she's crazy. Like, I'm not going to die. I'm fine. And she's like, that's the problem. You think you're fine. You don't even know why you're here. Why'd you show up here? Why are you an Alcoholics Anonymous? I was like, I have no clue what's wrong with me. And so I went to her house. I had to go and call the other woman. I had to tell her, hey, listen, I'm going to go through the big book with some other woman. And I was really scared to do that. It was this whole thing. And that was the beginning of communication. Can you believe it? There's a thing called intimacy, and we get to have it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I called her, and I explained to her that I was going to work with this other woman. And then I showed up at that woman's house, and I was, like, there 10 minutes early, and I was so excited. And, like, who's excited to do step work? Like, I was legit ready. Like, I was ready for what you guys had, and I had cried enough. And so we went in, and she broke down the doctor's opinion, and she told me, like, when I drink, I have a physical problem. Like, my body, like, whatever, breaks down alcohol differently. And when she explained it to me, it really made sense. She told me, like, she explained the depressant. She's like, it's a depressant. Like, what do you feel when you drink? And she was really shooting in the dark. What if I got tired when I drank? Like, she would have been screwed. But she kind of knew, I guess. And she was like, I was like, I wake up. I get excited. I want more. I want to go out. I want to be out all night. Like, I go to happy hour, and I wake up. Like, I don't go to bed till 6 a.m. You know, like, that's insane. I just can keep drinking and drinking and drinking, and there's no limit. And that's the allergy. And I had no clue. And today I believe I had the allergy. It took me like a year doing this work and sitting with other women to really believe it, because I would talk myself out of it. Like, that's how tricky this thing is. Even though my track record is clear, I couldn't really believe it until I, like, listened to other women's experience. But so she explained that to me. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And then we kind of got into the mental obsession, but I couldn't really see that totally yet until I was, like, really sober and really thinking a lot how obsessive I am. And because I also had not a unique experience. I just had an experience. I've had other women have this experience where my obsession was removed before I started doing the 12 steps. I've worked with women where their obsession is still running through, like, all the way to 10. They still have an obsession to drink. I had no obsession to drink. I was so done. By the grace of God, I just was done. And so anyway, we went through the work, and I did the steps in 4 weeks. There's no rules. I don't care how slow or long it takes you or short it takes you. I don't really care. It's like not my problem or my business. All I know is I just did what she told me to do. And I was ready for it, and we rapidly, like, went through the steps. And I normally take women through wherever they're at. Like, every person is so unique. There's no cookie cutter. And I used to bang this book over people's heads and want everybody to do it this way. And, like, I don't like this meeting because it's this and it's this. And it's like, oh, my God, I love every meeting in America. Like, I am so lucky to even get to a meeting today. Like, my life is so full today that it's hard to even get there. So how dare I mock, like, a discussion meeting? It's the best. I love hearing about people's shit because it makes me feel so excited that I'm not obsessing like that, or that, like, I went through that early in sobriety, or, like, I just love it. But I used to not feel that way because I just was so excited about, I just got this solution and I wanted everyone to have it. And I made sure you knew that. So we go through the work, and I go through pretty quickly, and I see, I read that I'm a tornado roaring through the lives. Hearts are broken. And I'm literally, like, laughing at her. I'm like, you're crazy. I'm not a tornado. Like, people love me. I'm nice. Like, in my head, I really believe, like, I'm this, like, good person. I have no clue what my self-centeredness looks like. Like, it's really glaring to everybody else, but I just cannot see it. And it took a really long, I swear all of my growth came when I sat with another woman and went through the 12 steps of AA. That's where I could really see myself. And that's why going through the steps quickly for me was like, whatever, because I'm not learning anything when going through the steps. yeah, I'm getting through the work. I'm reading some. I'm getting to learn how to be intimate with another woman, which was my sponsor. But I'm not understanding anything. It's all blubber to me. I have no clue. Okay, like, higher power. Sure, I'm in. I didn't care what you were selling. I wanted to kill myself. I do not care what you are selling. I want it. And so that's what I did. And so anyway, we go through, and I just want to share one experience I had with, I had a dad in my life that wasn't in my life. 6 years, I hadn't seen him. I didn't even know where he lived. I hated him to the depths of my soul. I was going to my grave before I ever saw him again. He's the worst man in America, blah, blah, blah. And within 3 minutes, she had my mind changed. And it only lasted for that night. It's not like I had this explosion of a mind and I walked out of there like, I love him. In that moment, I could see clearly that I was just as sad and lonely and scared as my dad was. She put me on the same level as him, and it was frightening. And I was like, oh my God, I've been hating this man. And I take on a lot of people's stuff too. So I actually hated him for like a bunch of shit he did to like other people, but it's like my problem. And I took it all on, and it was like clear. And she didn't even say much to me. It was kind of just all coming out. And that's the best part. Like, as a sponsor, like, I don't know anything. I actually don't even know what I'm doing. And like at all. But it doesn't matter because I've been through the process and God's working through me. Like, I'm just literally a vessel to like get you to the other side of all this pain, to get you to a higher power. And that's what this woman did for me. And she changed my life. And she said, you know, I said, he was, so we made a list of all the amends, right? Like, I did an easy list, a hard list. And then the maybes are like, I don't even know if we're supposed to make these ones yet. And then the nevers are like, never on my great, never. He was number one. And he was like my third amends. Like, that's the power of this program. That's the power of God. That was a God in my life that I didn't even know was there. Because I, she said, go home and write a letter to this man what it would look like if you didn't hate him. I was like, okay. So I went in, I prayed a little, did some jobbies that she told me to read. And I was just like, God, thank you from the bottom of my heart that I know you better. Like, I don't know anything, you know, I can't feel anything. I'm not connected. And I start writing this letter, and it's like breathtaking. Like, I read it and I'm like, I didn't even write this. I just wasn't even there writing it. It was beautiful. It was like, Dad, I don't know what happened, and I don't care. Like, let's move forward. Let's have a life together. Like, what? And I found his address and I sent it. And it was like, please meet me, call me, here's my number, you know. And like 3 days later, I got a call from an unknown number from Jamison, and I was like, and I knew it. And I was like, I made a mistake. Like, immediately, I was like, oh my God, I should have sent the letter. I was so scared. And I picked it up, and he was like, hey, I got your letter. And he was crying. This man is a cold man. He doesn't cry, but he does apparently. And he was crying, and my perception of him was totally skewed. And maybe he did change a little bit. I don't know, but all I know is I changed. My perspective was completely different. And we met up at a pizza shop, and we ate chicken together, and we laughed, and he cried, and I cried, and it was like this amazing experience. To say he's like a little bit of a thorn in my side today, sure. But he's a parent, so who isn't? But like now I see him once a month. I've set really good boundaries. I've learned how to set boundaries with them, but I go there and I give them my time. And like that's a, like, it's just a miracle, the fact that I can even be in his life. He walked me down the aisle at my wedding. Like, yeah, I know, I got married. Can you believe it? Some loser wanted to marry now. some idiot. so... yeah, but anyway, I just love that experience because it was truly like never, number one, never, and it happened. And like that is not because of me. That's not because I forced myself to write, to learn step two. Let me learn about how to get to God. There's no learning. I just came. Like I just showed up and you just come to believe slowly but surely. And then you're sitting in the rooms for 6 months and you watch like Joe Smith, who was like dying, like recover, and you're like, whoa. And then you work, and then you sit with another girl and she wakes up and she has a life, and then she like goes out and has a job and rebuilds her life and maybe has a kid and like does some stuff with her life, and you're like, whoa, it really works. And I come to believe every single day a little bit more. It's like the craziest thing ever. And so I go through the work, and she's like, okay, it's your time now. And I'm like, my time? What are you talking about? She's like, it's time for you to get a sponsee. And I was like, what? And I was like 6 months sober, and everyone was probably like, you are way too early. You still cry at every meeting. Like, there's no way, you know? And so we're in this meeting, and there's this girl, and she walks up to this woman who's my sponsor and says, like, will you help me? And she pulls me. Like, I swear she had, like, laser vision from across the room, and I was just like, pulled back, and I was like, hey. And she was like, this is your sponsor. And that was like it. The rest is history. This girl showed up in my house. We went through the work. I had no clue what I was doing. She was just telling me that I told her that 1,000 times, and I was like, I have no clue what I'm doing, because I'm like afraid, and apparently vigorously honest, right? That's what I was told, so I'll just tell you what's up. You're coming, I don't know what I'm doing. And she's alive today, hey, not because of me, but like, whatever, just saying. So ever since then, I didn't stop, and I have not picked up a drink. I have not had a desire to drink. I've thought about alcohol. I'm alcoholic. It was a big part of my life. It was the best part of my life before Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol and men was like everything. And now it's like, I'll think about it. I occasionally will be like, huh, that looks kind of fun. And then I'm like, huh, that's funny. Like, I don't have fun when I do that. You know, I'm in reality today. And when I'm not, I have such a foundation and a network that these women are like, hey, honey, your reality's over here. Like, they bring me back and they show me, like, that's not real. That's not real what you're saying and thinking. This is what's real. Let me remind you. And I need them, and they're sent from God. And so I went through the work. I started working with others, like, immediately. Like, I didn't stop. And I see this, and, like, it just is what it is, but I only know my experience. I started vigorously working with others, and I was free pretty much every day. And that's it. And I see women who go through 1 through 11 and they want to die in pain, in emotional pain, or they can't get to their commitments, or they can't even get a commitment, or, you know, whatever. And it's like, that's the problem. Like, you have to do it on a rotation every day, all the time. And I don't fill my life. I have a life today, and I've learned some balance in AA and whatever. God has shown me that. But I do it intensely. And if I do that for the rest of my life, I know I will not pick up again. There's no way I can drink again if I do this work. I am so free from the obsession to drink. And if it does come back, I pray and hope that some woman in my life that I've built a relationship with will be like, yo, you sound sick. Like, get it together. You know, do not be afraid to tell me that, because I get real sick real quick, like within a day. And the more I sit with women and the more I hear the pain and I see it and I watch them, especially like I've worked with women whose story don't even look like mine at all, chronically relapsing still. And it's like, I used to never do this. Wake up every day and say, thank you, God, for keeping me sober yesterday and waking me up today. Like, I never used to do that. Today, I do it every day, because these women, like, the pain I'm seeing is insane. I don't ever want to go. I'm, like, the luckiest person in the world. It's crazy. So what had happened was, the first year was awesome. I was coasting. I was living life. I was in AA. I was surrounded. I barely, like, saw the outside world. I was, like, in this AA bubble, you know? And then, like, so 0 to 1 was real fun, awesome AA, woo. 1 to 2... it was painful. I had life. I started to date. I waited the 1 year. There's nowhere in the book it says that. I don't care what you do. Go for it. Have fun. I am, like, incapable of being with another, so I waited a year. It didn't matter because I was still a psycho the minute I started dating. I dated a homeless guy who I, like, no offense, like, there's lots of homeless people, but he wasn't in AA. I was just taking care of him and paying for stuff. Like, it was so insane. At a year sober, and I'm up here, like, talking from the podium, like, really helping women, and I'm, like, dating this guy, and I'm lying about it, and I'm keeping secrets, and I'm starting to get sick, and I'm not doing a 10-step, an 11-step, and I'm 12-ing, right? I'm doing a lot of 12, so it looks real good on the outside. I got women everywhere, but I don't know. I have no clue what meditation is. I didn't even start that. I didn't even know anything, and I almost relapsed. And I start thinking about drinking, but not like the thought like, oh, that looks kind of funny. The thought like, what if I went in that bar? Who would pick me up? Because I'm a really responsible drunk. I don't drink and drive. Like, this is my thinking. I'm insane. And that scared the crap out of me. Thank God I had a foundation. And I called my sponsor at the time. She said, get over here now. And we fist stepped this immediately. It was a resentment. It's always something. It's always a resentment that's in there. And I went through it and I immediately saw myself. And that's when I really woke up. To who I was as an alcoholic and, like, the destruction that I lead. So after that, I was pretty free, and I knew what I had to do, and I had another woman come in my life, and she taught me about a 10th step and, like, breaking down my resentments all the time and writing it out. Did you write it out? Did you write it out? Did you write it out? Like, and I'm like, what am I right? Like, no, I need to just talk. And she's like, of course we need to talk. That's all I ever do. Do you ever shut up? I don't shut up. I can't sit and write. I need you to hear me. And it's, like, insane. And, like, thank God. And she showed me so much about Alcoholics Anonymous, like, to the point where I was just, like, it was awesome. She semi, like, half sponsored me a little bit. But anyway, then I, you know, changed sponsors. I found another woman, and I just have been growing in effectiveness and understanding. And I mess up a lot, and I'm not perfect, and I really, really don't know anything. All I have is my experience. And the two things that I just want to share that my sponsor taught me the most that right lately that I can see clearly. unconditional love. I didn't love anything. I'm intolerant of everyone. Don't breathe. Like, you suck. I hate you. Unconditional love. If it wasn't for this woman, I would be alone. She taught me everything there is about just loving, just being open to like every kind of AA meeting, every kind of person, every family member. The guy that I started dating, I said no to. I was afraid of men. I couldn't even be near them. I was afraid. I dated a little online, traumatic. And then he just comes flying in and I say no. And then I marry him like a year and some months later. Yeah, we like to move quick here in Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I am married, and it's crazy, and the reason I share it is because I have to be unconditionally loving. I cannot put conditions on him, just like sponsees, and I'm like, every time I think about who do I want to be? Do I want to be a representation of Alcoholics Anonymous? I have to be that even in my relationship. So when I'm screaming at him, blocking the door, you're not allowed to leave, you must love me, like that's the stuff I do, he's looking at me like, you're Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have to step back and remember, and like, I don't have a pause button today. I'm hoping it comes. Let's hope it comes, because he might run. But I'm working on it, you know, and I get to make amends today, though. I sit in front of him, and I look him in the eye, and I say I was wrong for that, and he loves it, and he's one of us, and it's like, it's insane. So, and unconditional love, and the last thing is, oh my God, what'd she teach me? I don't even remember. Anyway, she's amazing. I wish she could be here. So the point is that AA truly revolutionized like every part of me, and it happened pretty rapidly, but the slow changes are what are so amazing. Like today, I can see that like I don't need to talk all the time. I can be quiet. I want to learn from you. I want to listen. I don't want to keep cutting. I cut people off. It's like what I do. Like, you're talking? No, I'll just cut you off. Like, it's amazing. So I came in. I just kept showing up. I kept moving my feet. I kept doing what you were telling me to do. And I've completely changed. I've got everything I want. I'm not saying you're going to come in here and get everything you want. But I've truly gotten what I wanted, and none of it made it better. I got married. I thought, that's the ticket. That's going to make it. It makes it worse. Just so you know, life gets really hard when you involve someone else. It's really hard. But what's great is I get closer to God every single day. I've never been so close to God in my life and still had a man next to me. It's the craziest experience of my life. If you want that experience and you're new and you have no clue what I'm talking about, I apologize. Come see us at the end of the meeting. We've got lots of awesome women, and I'm going to miss this area so much, and I'm just so grateful I could do some service before I move. Thank you.